Hall of Fame broadcaster Marty Brenneman here, and he's the best storyteller in the game, and it's time to sit back, relax, and have some laughs. Welcome to the mayor's office, and here's your host, Sean Casey.
Bam! Coming back in, Chinch. This is going to be a doozy, brother.
Most underrated Allman Brothers song ever, Back Where It All Began.
Oh, yeah, brother. You know, we're back on No Filter today, dude, which is pretty cool. And, you know, the guy that we're bringing in, obviously, is a good friend of ours. And you know what? I think it's probably give him a little bit of credit for why we're doing what we're doing, which is pretty cool. Well, I'm gonna introduce him first, though. 11 years in the show. You know, it's fun because, like I said, when we do this show, you get your buddies and you start to research them. You're like, damn, these guys were legit. You know what I mean? So I go back and look at some of his accolades. 11 years of Major League Baseball, MLB Network analyst, was selected to the Oakland A's all-time great team back in 2018, third of the 50th season team. So obviously, you know, he was a stud. 2004, 283 with 2073. Went to Arizona, put up some sick numbers. In 2007, was 11th in the MVP voting. Almost 300, had 21 bombs, 50 stolen bases, and played in 160 WAGOs, which is unbelievable. Was voted the best left fielder in Major League Baseball at the time. Also, too, he's an ultra-endurance athlete. This guy's an absolute killer. He's the owner of No Filter. He holds the Guinness Book of World Records for most holes of golf in a day, 420. He's... Oh, well, his mind is unbelievable. Also, two-time author, smart cat, bro. The Effortless Daily Hustle also has a footboard. Let's bring him in. Also, one of the best shows ever with Deuces Wild with my idol, Will Clark. Yes. Him and Bersey do it every week on nofilter.net. Let's bring in our man, the originator, Eric Burns. What's up, Bersey?
Dude, I'm so stoked to see you guys.
Dude. What are we, man?
it's fun to have you back on No Filter, but I mean, most importantly, when you guys came up with the idea and concept that you wanted to do a show, you wanted to do a podcast, and to see you guys stay committed to it. And I've watched a number of them, but it's only continued to get better and better and better and better. And I think it's, you know, really proves like you're only going to get out what you put in. And yeah, you guys have dedicated yourselves to the process of doing this. And it's fucking awesome to watch, man.
Thanks, bro.
Dude, Burnsy, you are the ultimate process guy, bro. Like, first off, I appreciate that. And second off, you know, for all our listeners out there, you know, we started this show. I'm an investor in No Filter with Burnsy. It's an unbelievable platform for anybody that wants to be a podcaster out there. I can't, Burnsy, there's no doubt. I don't know how many people I've recommended No Filter to. As a matter of fact, a buddy of mine, a guy I run into at the produce at Whole Foods, this guy Connor, he goes, hey man, I'm getting ready to start a podcast. I go, listen, I got an extra Shure mic for you because I got so many freaking mics because I couldn't get it right. You know what I mean? So I said, I'm going to give you a Shure mic, but I said, you got to go to nofilter.net and they give you the platform. They give you everything you need to start your podcast. So I know there's like 5 or 6 or 7 people that are on this platform that I've recommended because it's unbelievable. First off, for you, man, how has No Filter, I know you've worked your butt off for over a year now, a couple years now, putting this together. How's it going? Where are you at? Is it where you thought it would be? And are you still grinding as you did from day one?
Well, I don't think the grind's ever going to stop. It's a process. And I think that we went into it knowing that the best thing for us is to recognize what we don't know. And there's, you know, certain elements and things that pop up along the way where you got to continue to adapt and adjust. So I think most importantly is we created a platform that is different than anything out there still. And it basically, we stream in real time. So for anybody right now, for example, who's, you know, watching the stream and firing on the chat. So you see Stephen Luker on there, you see Michelle Drew on there. This becomes interactive. Then if Stephen Luker or Michelle Drew or anybody else wants to hit the knock button, then they come in and in real time, we can have this conversation. So doing the shows with Will, which Case, you mentioned, your boyhood idol, my boyhood idol.
Yeah.
And to see these fanboys and girls come on and have this opportunity to meet Will Clark and ask him questions and forge these relationships. I think more than anything, the one thing that we're really proud of, you know, at this point, because all of our focus was building out the tech and getting that right and making sure, because you guys know, like when you guys first came on, we were a fucking shit show, man. Like we're but you guys knew that. Like we're like, hey, like
come so were we
this with us.
We were too. Exactly. We didn't know we were doing on any platform, yeah. You know, and
dive in the water, right?
And that's it. So as we've built it out, as we've nailed the tech, as we've been able to, you know, experience, you know, all of these different use cases, like whether it was a fundraiser that I did, I ran 8 hours on a treadmill for my 46th birthday. Dude, we raised damn near $10,000 off the tip button on No Filter.
Wow.
Just people coming on, supporting, raising money for the Life and Play Foundation, hitting the tip button. So really what we are and what we've noticed is that we're a platform that can be used in multiple ways, but we're I like to say content creator's dream. Like we're empowering the content creator while giving the content creator a voice. And then, you know, basically letting them, if they want to charge for their shows, they could charge for their shows. I played around with it a little bit. I mean, I do an exercise class. I charge $10. I do a daily hustle. I don't charge a dollar. I do, you know, the show with Will Clark. We've charged for it before. We haven't charged for it before. We've just kind of played around. I don't care about making money on this platform. Obviously, there's a much bigger play here. But the more use cases we can provide, we've done cooking classes on here. We had this baseball notes guy on the other day, Clint McGill. He's unbelievable. And Clint's really into the mental side of the game and everything else. I highly recommend anyone who's watching this podcast to, and I'll send you the link, Kay. So somehow,
yeah,
you
please guys do. Put it out there. Please do.
But this was just invaluable, I think, information. It was, you know, maybe an hour and a half long where kids were coming in and they were asking questions. What happens? Like, how do I get over a strikeout? How, you know, how do I like mentally just get over it? And how do I get my confidence back? And so I, you know, what you mentioned, Kay, is all about process and everything else. No Filter's been a process. Within the process, we've built out entire B2B, which is a business-to-business site. So because of our technology, we're capable of bringing on up to 50,000 people right now. We think that could get up to 500,000 people. And to do that in real time, it's a huge asset to large businesses. So we have about a half a dozen businesses right now testing it out, using it, working through the kinks. The same process we did with the B2C. And then it's a matter of marketing. I dropped this line on you guys before the show started, my favorite P.T. Barnum quote, but it's without promotion, something terrible happens. Fucking nothing. Right. Zero. So, you know, as cool as the tech is, as cool as all the shows are, as cool as the use cases are, it will take promotion. But our goal always has been to try to attract content creators to come here with the idea that they can help bring their audience. And everything in life is very niche-y. Like, right. It's like, you try to, even with us, try to be everything to everyone. You can't really do that. So I'm still going to focus on sports. I'm still going to focus on the original concept of the platform, which is alternative broadcasting. Went on the other night with Will Clark during the All-Star game. And I'm watching the All-Star game with an 8-time All-Star. And, you know, Will's, you know, Will, like he's just shooting from the hip and this and that, and whether he's bitching about the uniforms or he's right. So that was it. Like to be able to authentically broadcast. Now, Chinch, you, who obviously former executive producer, MLB Network, Case, who I've worked with countless times, and me, all three of us, I know at least two of us, and I imagine Case at some point, got called into the principal's office.
Oh yeah.
Yes. And we were reprimanded for the shit we said on the air. And guess what? We didn't even say shit.
Right.
It had
right.
nothing to do with the 4-letter fuck word. It had to do with just you were a little hard on that guy. Don't you think that if can you believe a guy stepped on another guy's Achilles heel as he's run down the first baseline? Now, how dare I possibly recognize that as a absolute dirty, disgusting play? And it's just, so you gotta watch yourself. Hey man, the thought and idea of truth, authenticity, that matters to me. That matters who I am as a person. That matters to me who I am in business. That matters to me who I am as an ultra endurance athlete, is staying true to yourself. And that's one thing that I could say. I know we've done that, obviously, here at No Filter. And it's how I try to live my life.
Bernsie, don't you think, though, listen, at the end of the day, bro, still, you're still a public figure. You're still Eric Burns, the brand. So, like, you know, obviously No Filter, you know, you can speak the truth and get out there. But also, dude, don't you think you still have to ride a fine line? You're still not going to say what stuff that you say to your buddies, you know what I mean, that off air or having a couple pops one night on a Friday night at your house. When you're not on air, that you wouldn't say on No Filter. Do you agree with that? You're not gonna. It's not like, you know, anarchy, because you still have a brand and you still have a company. You still have you know people to feed.
Nope. Where'd he go?
No. He gone.
See if he pops back in here. There he is.
I'm back. My internet sucks. That's on me. Sorry, guys. Okay. Every now and again during the day, it just gets jammed up here with everyone coming up and staying in the mountains during the summer. But, yeah, go ahead, Case. You were in the middle of asking a question.
Yeah, so my question was like, hey, listen, at the end of the day, you know, you do talk about No Filter, which is, you know what, it is such a wonderful platform. Like I said, anyone out there is looking to start a podcast that wants a voice, they got the platform for you. But the point you were just making about, you know, obviously – when we're on TV on MLB Network, or if people are on ESPN or wherever they are, CBS, NBC, you know, obviously you have to maybe walk a finer line than you might have to on No Filter. But Eric Burns has a brand. Eric Burns has kids. You're not going to still say some things on No Filter that you would say maybe Friday night with your buddies having a couple pops, just talking about life. You still got to ride that fine line too, right?
Yes, but I'm not an asshole, right? I'm not demeaning people. There's two rules here at No Filter. Number one, no hate speech. Number two, no below the belt picks. Right? Nothing below here. No below the belt picks.
Nice.
Like that. Then all of a sudden you're diving in an entire new area. It's called porn. So,
right.
You know, so if you keep standard those two rules, then, you know, I think you're fine. Now, Case, just like you said, you know, minus whatever it is, like the occasional F-bomb, which I also somewhat try to mind my P's and Q's and everything. Yeah. I don't say anything different than what I said on MLB Network.
I really don't.
I guess there's certain things that you could say about teams, obviously, because the teams indirectly on the network, and there was always owners that we all three of us know would call in that would complain about certain things that have been said about their teams. So you don't have to deal with any of that, obviously. But I think the biggest thing is, you know, to have the freedom to say what you want without having to fear repercussions. I never liked that feeling from day one.
Right.
At MLB Network. And it was, dude, I love John Entz. I would have never been there without John Entz. John Entz vouched for me. John Entz was also my biggest critic. And so John would be like, every show. Entz, what's up, dude? You can't say this. You can't do that. Entz, hey, listen, man. The music's pretty loud out here at town, bro. I got sushi coming on the way. I got bottles and models at the table, bro. Hey, we'll talk about it tomorrow.
In the defense, though, I will say there was one night I was sitting there, and all of a sudden Eric Burns takes his phone out right at the end of a live broadcast and starts cranking.
The Grateful Dead.
Driving that train high on cocaine in the first week. That was a nut.
Oh, man. The early years. You know what's crazy is that, you know, part of that feels like it was three lifetimes ago. And part of it also feels like it was 3 days ago.
Right.
But what's really cool, and I have nothing but love for Entz, for Tony Petitti, for MLB Network, for everyone that works there, still to this day, keep in contact with
so many good people.
Almost everyone I interact with there, like those are like some of my core friends in life. And I can't tell you how grateful that I was to have the opportunity to spend my time there and really kind of find my love for baseball beyond playing.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Total sense, dude. You're missed there, too. Your energy will always be missed there. It was a great time. Berzy, I want to swing this a little bit, bro, because there's so much to talk about with you, man. Like, you have, you know, like right now you're an ultra endurance athlete. You do so many different things, you know, the Ironmans, the trek across the country. And there's so many things to talk about that makes Eric Burns, Eric Burns, one of a kind human being. There's 8 billion people on the earth. There's no one like Eric Burns, man. That's what makes him so special. The energy he brings, the enthusiasm he brings for life. And it's real. It's genuine. He's got protocol, how he lives his life day in and day out. I want to go back to your family, dude, because I know your mom and dad are a big part of your life. And I know your dad was a baller, dude, CEO of a company, was a black belt in Kenpo karate, 20 years, had his own studio. You know, your mom was a marathoner. I mean, it's almost like a joke when I was reading about it. I'm like, no, this is really real. This is his parents. Your mom was a flight attendant, but she was also into marathons and she was a great athlete. So I want to go back to Eric Burns as a kid, brother. Like, can you talk about your parents a little bit? What are some of the lessons that you've learned, that you learned from your parents, that you still bring as a parent? You're such a wonderful dad to your kids. But what are some of the things that to this day, Eric Burns, your parents taught you, and things that you still think about, sayings you still might say to your kids?
Well, there's a few. I think first and foremost, you guys have to really understand that I was a mess. Like, I mean, getting kicked out of school, to the sense where I never got expelled. Suspended several times, kicked out of class almost every day.
Why, Burzy? Why? The ADHD? Well, what was it?
I think a lot of it was ADHD. And as a matter of fact, my mom said she just ran into my fourth grade teacher, Miss Elaine Weiner. And I got kicked out of fourth grade every day. And Miss Weiner had followed her daughters, went to UCLA. And so when I went to UCLA, she followed me there. And then my career. And then when I played for the A's and so forth. And then when I came out with the effort list, Life Lessons from a Human Crash Test Dummy, I sort of explained that period of my life where I really,
great book.
I really struggled as a kid. And I was diagnosed with ADHD. They didn't even know what it was back in the 80s. They prescribed me coffee. Like, obviously
coffee, not Adderall, coffee. not Adderall, no, just coffee. Right.
But it's the same concept, right?
Right.
Cause you have an upper to basically bring you down to be able to focus. And right. I always was able to hyper-focus in sports. That was never an issue. I did know, and this was funny, because when I went to the Dominican for the first time, and I'm not sure if I've played much better anywhere. I was the first American in 20 years to win the MVP award of the league. And towards the end of the year, I showed up early one day, and they were making the coffee, but usually like the coffee was already made. And so the guys, you know, doing, it's like espresso. It's in the way they do it. They it's reverse brew. So it doesn't drip down. It actually brews up. Yeah. And then it makes it this nice thick coffee. And so he's pouring it in, and you know, it's one of those big jug pots, and you just press it down and whatever. And he's pouring it in. Right when he gets done, he pulls out a bag, and here comes the bag. And here comes these little green pills. And it's probably no less than 8 of these things.
Oh my God, greenies.
And I'm like, Torito, man, ¿qué pasa? I said, this is the cafe? You put this at the cafe every day? And he's like, Papi, yeah, man. He said, why do you think you hit so well? And I'm like, holy shit. Dude, I was beaning up without even knowing I was beaning up. And then I was going out there, and instead of being like most guys on being like, you know, just all jack, I was like this.
Wow. Hyper-focused.
I was a fucking assassin. And it was just, and that's the reason why, is because it was a stimulant. And so what it's doing for other people, and is bringing them up where they think they're going to, you know, say maximize or optimize performance that way. It was happening for me, because it would have been the same thing as taking an Adderall. And then for that period of time, it obviously allowed me to hyper-focus. So that was the whole ADHD thing. I'll bring it back to when I was a kid. Don't ever use that as an excuse. Don't ever let your kid use that as an excuse. Don't ever let that be an excuse for why, you know, you're not, say, doing well in school. Because when I got to the sixth grade, I figured out on my own. I created routines. I understood what it was going to take in order to study. I knew when I was nine, I wanted to go to Stanford. And so there was this process.
So you went to UCLA.
Correct. But the whole that's a whole nother story. Had a full scholarship. Well, it's 50% ride to Stanford. So, but there's this process was like, if I want to go to Stanford, play baseball,
right?
Then I need to go to St. Francis. If I had to go to St. Francis, like I'd start getting your grades. Like there was this boom. And then right. If I want to go to Stanford, I had to maintain this certain level and on. But I knew that, look, we all have our excuses. We all have this, we all have that, but we also all have the ability to actually do it. And it's when someone, the two things you control in life, and this goes back to that saying that my, you know, dad would always tell me, it's like, it's your attitude and your effort. That's it. So you show up with the right attitude, you have the proper effort, anything is possible. And that was one of the greatest things ever, because my parents never, ever, ever squashed my dreams. So when I was that kid, that 9-10-year-old kid telling people I was going to play in the big leagues, it was like, yeah, of course you are.
That's awesome.
And everyone else is laughing off the background, like, yeah, sure, kid. I mean, there's no one from my area has ever done it and everything else. And so, you know, for me, if you want to be great, you got to be fucking obsessed. And I was obsessed, and it wasn't just baseball, it was sports. And then I got to the point where I took that obsession and put it towards school, because I knew that's what it was going to take to eventually accomplish my goal. So, you know, the long story on the whole Stanford UCLA thing, the short story of it is that I had gotten the scholarship offer from Stanford, everything else. UCLA would have been, say, the fallback plan. Those were the only two schools really I was recruited by too. Recruiting was just, it's totally different back then. And the night before the signing date, Mark Barquis came over to the house. And I thought, I mean, he's coming to the house, of course, like probably just dropping off the letter of intent, maybe a Stanford hat and that's it. And he said, we couldn't get you into the school in the early admissions. And I just, put my head down, walked out of the room, tears flowing down my eyes, like grabbed my binky, like I couldn't believe it. Now, I didn't even stick around long enough for him to say, look, you got to wait for the winter admissions. And I still think there's a chance. He did say that. And I knew that. He said, there's still a chance, maybe even a good chance we get you in. But I had this scholarship offer over at UCLA. And it was like, I just felt like it was my universe speaking to me. And I called Gary Adams, and I just think that's sort of how I've lived my life, where it's like, okay, I had this goal and, you know, I was very singular focused on it. And when that goal, for whatever reason, got derailed or put off track, instead of whining and bitching about it and crying, but I did.
Right.
And as I would, if anything else happens, as we all do, because we're emotional beings, but we have to move on. We have to be able to redirect. We have to be able to pivot. We have to be able to continue to understand that all these things in our life are going to happen to us. Great. So much of that we cannot control. Our reaction is 100% within our control, right? Everything that we do, it has to do with our reaction and what we decide to do with whatever is thrown at us in our life. And so that was sort of a really good first time. And then, you know, with my dad and martial arts and everything else, it was, you know, to have somebody support me and my sister and our family the way he did. He was the eternal optimist, Case. You actually, bro, you remind me a lot of him. Like there's certain things that you bring out that, you know, there was funny because what was it that there was something, was it Jim Rohn that you were reading?
Yeah.
And this was when we were both at MLB Network. And I remember you telling me about that. And my dad had given me this Jim Rohn book, like way back when I was still playing. And he was always looking for a way to, quote unquote, I think, optimize his life. And then the other thing he told me that, you know, will resonate to me, and I've obviously now passed this on to my kids and this message, is that there's only two things that he was going to be, him and my mom would be able to give us, my sister and I, that nobody would ever be able to take away. The first is education, and the second is experience. Mm. And so everything that he did for us in our lives had to do with education. How is this going to help you? And then experience. He's like, dude, he's like, I could give you all the money in the world. You go to Vegas, you fucking blow it in a weekend. I give you a car. He's like, you go ghost ride it off a cliff, which apparently he did with his first car. He had a little fun twitch.
What was that story, Burns? Did he ever tell you it?
He just got some beater car for $500. I mean, his dad worked at a steel mill, right? And he didn't.
Right.
He worked at a gas station. Like, part of the reason why he didn't really play sport, he played basketball in high school, but that was it. But it was like, that's all he could do because he was working at Chevron.
You had to work. Yeah, dude, my dad worked as a janitor after school. He's like, I didn't play baseball. I had to work to pay for Catholic education. I'm like, are you kidding me? He's like, yeah, I mopped floors every day after school for 4 years.
100%. Yeah. And so he had this rig that he got and, you know, paid like $500 for it. And then one night him and his boys went out and I don't know if they were in Half Moon Bay or whatever, but they decided like now was time. And they got out of the car and they ghost ride it off, big explosion, whatever else. Like, you know, it's nuts. So, but education experience. And if you think about that, like everything I've done in my life now for my kids, I think about like, what are they learning and what are they experiencing? And they go hand in hand because with experience comes education. And I don't think there's any better education than experience. So, you know, it's as much as, you know, this is a very interesting world that we live in. And as much as it is this total sort of, oh, well, I got this and I got this and I got this. And I guess I know you can say this and, you know, maybe even Mr. Chinch here, big executive producer, top network here. As you accumulate wealth, I think you start to realize
that's not the answer.
Cool. It's not like I one of the happiest like times of my life that I could think of was basically living out of a van going across the country that started 4 years ago today.
Right.
The Tri Across America. Like there's no, you know, Tara and I always talk about it. It's like that you could put me, I mean, other than you could put us in an Airstream and let us roll across the country and go like place to place to place. And, you know, for a while we had an Airstream. That's how we were raising our kids. Like those are the things, you know, that matter. I think my financial advisor, LaRocca, laughs at it all the time. But there was one time he called, he said, I was able like this for this. I said, Rock, I said, trust me when I tell you this. Give a fuck. I'll go live in a trailer tomorrow and I'm going to be good. Fear the man that has nothing to lose, too. And, ooh, and so like when you that. Hold on to these things and you try to hold on, when you so hold on so tight,
right,
you'll always let it go. It'll never, it's you'll never be able to hold on to it.
Dude, that's such a great point. And there's a certain surrender for life. I know for me, I mean, you know, people think, oh, you got the American dream. You're a major league baseball player. You made millions of dollars, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, yeah, at the end of the day, it pays your bills and allows you to go on a trip or two at the end of the day. Because the bottom line is I really believe that true happiness is an inner state. You know, you gotta, every day you gotta work on what you want out of your life, the protocols, the process, you know, going through, like, you know, creating, generating that happiness or that peace and that joy in your life. Like, I think I read something too, Burns. We always talk about fulfillment, fulfillment in all areas of your life, fulfillment in your relationships, fulfillment in your main relationship, your main relationship with your friends, fulfillment with your soul, fulfillment with your friends, fulfillment with your job, your finances, all that stuff. I think what happens is people think, I'm going to get uber rich. I'm going to become a multimillionaire and the rest will take care of itself. It's the biggest lie out there. They think that's what success is. No, success is, it's not success you're looking for money wise. It's fulfillment you want in all domains of your life. You don't have to be a millionaire to have that, right? At the end of the day, you have to be able to focus on all those domains and be the, and have a processes for each one of them and live the best life you can live.
Yeah. So I read this Bruce Lee quote the other day, and that was the other thing that my dad, like, stacks of the Bruce Lee books, manifestos. There's one case that maybe I'll either send it to you or I'll take pictures of it and send it to you. It's like handwritten stuff, like really, really cool. Like these martial arts manifestos. Yeah. And so my dad had the opportunity to spar against Bruce Lee.
Did he really? Oh my God, dude.
Badass. So that's one of the things that Bruce Lee said was that I'm not here to live up to your expectations and you're not here to live up to mine. That hit home because I think oftentimes we're out here and we're in the rat race and we're trying to do everything we can to portray an image or essentially accomplish this or accomplish that.
And, people please.
And you're always trying to people please. And you're always trying to chase these things. Right. Dude, it starts here, man.
Yep.
Are you good with yourself? Did you put in that right effort, right? Did you maintain the right attitude? And nobody knows better than you. I think, that's where I think I found a lot of contentment is knowing that. And that's why Chinch, like we talked about the authenticity. That's why this matters to me. That's why it's so important. Because if you stay true to yourself, that's when you find you put your head down on the pillow at night, you rest easy, you feel the air pass through your nostrils, you become in the here and the now, and we have these conversations and we feel like we're here, right? Like we all have the conversations where. And I feel like I've done a lot better job lately, but I don't want to say in one ear and out the other, but it's like, yeah, man. Yeah, cool. Yeah. Great to see you. Like have a conversation, ask someone how they're doing. Like really ask them how they're doing and get a response, pry into it, be in the moment, connect with people. That's what my parents, my mom and my dad, and it's still to this day, my dad passed away about 10 years ago unexpectedly.
Lose him?
Yeah, I think it froze out.
Coming back.
Yeah.
He's going to be back. This is good shit, bro.
Great.
Sorry, dudes.
Bertie, go ahead. You said your dad passed away 10 years ago, unexpectedly.
Yeah. Exactly. So, my dad passed away 10 years ago unexpectedly, and... My mom, it like in her 70s right now, bro, she works every single day, slaying it in real estate, sold a house yesterday. Like the commitment to being in the moment and the commitment to connecting with people is everything. And especially in a day and age when we get lost in this world of technology, dude, like one phone, two phones, iPad here that obviously keeps dropping you guys. Here's a computer over here. Here's the hard wire I probably should be doing this interview on that I'm not. Like there's all of these things, but I think now more than ever, the ability to connect in real time, the ability to connect with somebody, the ability to have these conversations that Chance, you and I had sitting at lunch at the Italian Mafia place in New Jersey. Right? Yeah. Case, it's you and I sitting at Tao, sitting across from each other, having these combos. Like, dude, I just got the chills a little bit. Like, that's living life, man. And so to bring all of this back to say the biggest lessons of my mom and dad and everything else, it's the ability to connect and the ability to be in the moment. And it's a reminder for all of us. The one I think helps me the most is the air through the nostrils. And this directly translates to success on a baseball field as well. And I tell all the kids that play for, I let them play travel team. If in the big moments of the biggest situations, feel the air pass through the nostrils, it'll bring us right back into the moment. And then we simplify. And I love the analogies of baseball life, because when life gets going really fast and we're in these big pressure sort of situations, feel the air pass through the nostrils, simplify, A to B, A to B, mm-hmm. Keep the ball, right? See life, right. See the things happening in front of us, and always be willing to make adjustments. Always be willing to know, you know, it's, you cannot think that you know everything. You cannot, like, whatever, you have to be a lifelong learner. And as soon as you think you're an expert in anything, you're not.
Trouble. Dude. You got to fix mindset.
Stay humble or be humbled. It's as simple as that. It's one of the greatest baseball terms that I heard early in my career. And that goes well beyond baseball. It's very much the same for life.
Bernsie, you know, like I love that you're talking about the breath, because I think the breath is so important. I agree with it. It's such a big part of my life, as far as, like, you know, when I'm in the meditations or throughout my day, when I feel an uneasiness, I know that when I get uneasy or get some anxiety, it's shortness of breath. So I got to get a breath, and I got to go in 6 through my nostrils, hold it out 8, a longer exhale, maybe a couple seconds to get back where I want to get back. And I tell my kids all the time too. I said, when you're playing the game, when you step out and you breathe, you reset the pitch, you reset the moment. It's something new. It doesn't matter if you looked bad out front on a changeup. That next pitch, he could throw you that same changeup. But if you're able to reset and slow down, that next changeup could be up, a bad one, you crush it for a home run, right? So I think it's the process of an at-bat, the process of playing the game. I want to talk about the process of life, of protocols, because I believe, you know, they talk about, you know, Andrew Huberman, I'm sure you look at, the neuroscientist from Stanford, awesome guy, was just on Jocko's podcast the other day, and he said the most successful people that he's been around, the guys that are the creme de la creme, live by clear systems, right? Every day they live by clear system, clear routines, clear habits. So I want to talk about you, Bernsie, because I know you do, and I know the way you live your life and how you do it. Can you talk about, what does the day in the life of Eric Burns look like? What is the process and protocol that you have in place when you get up in the morning?
Well, first and foremost, dude, I think it's... I think it's one of those things, because I've thought a lot about routine, and you can't be a slave to the routine. Mm-hmm. You can't, it's like you have to have some sort of grace or wiggle room, you know, whatever it is, because I've also seen people become so obsessed with a routine that they're scheduling out their shits. And I'm not kidding.
Right.
Like literally.
That's ridiculous.
And you and I both know who that guy is. Kane. So let's back up for a second. There's a term that we use with the Savannah Bananas, and I love how all this, you know, transit, like the Savannah Bananas obviously transcend baseball with everything.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk about the Savannah Bananas. That's the Harlem Globetrotters of band. It's a different animal.
we'll get into that for a second. Yeah. But it's called have a feel. And it's like, have a feel in life. Have a feel for a situation. Have a feel for when to do something, when not to do something. Like every single day, like, you need to have a feel. Have a feel for your day. Understand, right. Like, listen to yourself, listen to your day. What do you have on? So what I have started doing this is that in bed at night, and this really, really helps, dude. I'll put Thursday TDL, just to-do list, the shit I got to get done. So it's run in the morning, right? It's the first day. Footboard, run, two IG posts, one link into the footboard, the other link into the promotion for the Daily Hustle for that day, backed up with the Daily Hustle podcast I do each and every single morning with my boy Kowalski, backed up with I might be doing a master debater show that day with whoever it is. And then, you know, from there, it's, you know, today it was take Colton down to soccer camp on the tandem bike. meet Rock at the Perk for coffee. Back over here to the podcast with you guys and the glorious return to No Filter. right after this, I'm going to go downstairs. I'm going to hop on the treadmill. I'm going to crank that bitch up to about 10 degrees, and I'm going to hike and write, and I'm going to finish up a Daily Hustle that I have for tomorrow morning. So basically what the Daily Hustle is, if you're not signed up for it, go to ericburns.com, put your email address in there.
It's awesome. It's awesome. Yeah, it's awesome, bro.
The life optimization messages that some have to do with me, some have nothing to do with me. A lot have to do with books that I've read, experiences that I've either heard about, a lot that, you know, you try to, success leaves clues, right? So I like try to follow those clues of success and go. So we have one tomorrow that's going to be about, it'll be the 4-year anniversary of the launch of the Tri Across America. So I'll go and write that. Boom. I'll go pick up Colton at soccer camp. We just built this badass brand new cage down at my uncle's house in Reno. So we're going to go by the cage. We're going to go whack some balls. We're going to go fastball. We'd set the iron mic right next to the hack attack. So you could go click that off. Curveball.
That's awesome.
So we'll do that. I got to go.
The iron mic's throwing just heaters. The iron mic's throwing heaters. You got the hack attack throwing sliders, curveballs. Okay.
So right next to it. So basically the arm slots are about this far apart. No more than
that's,
a foot.
That's awesome, dude.
So you could work, you could work both of those. And that's, I got a story about that in a second, but then from there, I'm going to go pick up the van and we have a scrimmage game that we're going to play, on Saturday. So we're going to pick up, you know, I'll go pick up the van and then we'll drive down there tomorrow night and end up camping, and then go play this scrimmage game. But when it comes to the Iron Mike, like again, a kid, father was a 4th-degree black belt in Kempo Karate. My mom was a marathoner. No one in my family ever played baseball. And when I was 13 years old, my dad got me, or my parents got me Iron Mike for my birthday. And, you know, they thought they were being funny. They're like, hey, we got you a new friend. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, his name's Mike. I'm like, dude, what is wrong with you? Like, what are you talking about? And so he's like, my dad's like, take a walk with me. And I was just like, whatever. And so I walked down in a coal cage built Iron Mike machine in there. So from day one, I cranked that thing up to as fast as it could throw, which I got to believe is like, you know, mid 80s, like hovering damn near 90.
Yeah.
And I'd get in there and it was like whiff, whiff. And pretty soon, foul ball, pretty soon, bah, bah, bah. And I'm hitting line drives right back up the middle. And that's how you and I were taught, Dave, right? It was just low line drives back up the middle. That's all I tried to do. So fast forward 3 years. I'm at St. Francis High School. I'm a sophomore. I just get called up to varsity. Dan Serafini's on the mound. Left hand, top left.
Dan Serafini. I played with Dan.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Top left-handed pitching prospect in the country. 94 from the left side. It's funny because when he got to pro ball, he became like a shitballer, right? He was a bunch of change ups and that. So Serafini is dominating, like setting everyone up. Shoo. No one had a chance. I get up there. Scouts everywhere. Almost take his head off. Second at bat. Right under his feet. Third at bat. Spin his cap around. Bro, right after the game, Chris Bradford, legendary head coach, St. Francis High School, comes out to me. He's like, Birthday! Dan Serafini! Top prospect! Give me first round pick! Three bullets up the middle of Dan Serafini! No one else can touch him! 50 scouts in the stands? How'd you do it? Well, coach, I've been hitting off Dan Serafini in my backyard for the past 3 years. It's not an accident.
Right.
It's not an accident.
Right. Results aren't random, bro.
Bro, you fucking train. Tiger Woods said this the other day. Train hard to play easy.
Right.
Train hard, play easy. So when you get in there, and like, let's just take Biscuit, for example. He's my 10-year-old kid. Since he was 4 years old, I've taken tennis balls right out here in the front yard, and I have fired these fuckers as hard as I can. And same thing, like swings and miss, swings and miss, swings and miss. And eventually, you know, you find that right speed where just all right, now he's getting a little bit, and then bam. And I've watched his progression go as he's gone. And now to the point where, you know, yesterday I put this thing, it was 69 to 71 from probably like 46, 48 feet.
Right.
Like no problem. And it's not, you could say like, and the same thing you could say about Holiday's kid or Andrew Jones's kid or anything else, that they go 1-2 in the draft, right? Oh, the road's been paved for them. They know exactly, you know, like how to do it, and they have all the skills because their dads were big leaders and everything else. Bullshit. They do know what they're doing. And Jackson Holiday said something about the line along the lines of like a year ago, his dad came up to him and was like, ready to get to work? How bad do you want this? Because this isn't going to be my decision of what any of my kids want to do with their life. I mean, ultimately, it's going to be up to them. We can put them, though, in a position to succeed. And that's all we can do as parents. But from there, it's their choice. And that goes back to, if you want to be great, you've got to be obsessed. I was obsessed with that Iron Mike machine. Obsessed. Day, night, didn't matter. Before football practice, after football practice, double days, exhausted, after dinner, makeshift lights, flashlights. I just wanted to bang, dude. I love that feeling. And one of the things that this whole bananas experience and everything else has also taught me, dude, I love playing this game. To go out there and take batting practice, or you know, now, or just hitting off this iron mic yesterday, or whatever it is, with the bananas. So I pinch hit myself, rightfully so.
I saw that a couple times, three times, right? Were you 2 for 3?
Twice. One for two, and both times with the game on the line.
Oh my God!
You want to be the leader? I'm not going in like a 10-2 game. Like it's just now, man. Like. Game on the line. I put my 10,000 people, Birmingham, Alabama, dude. First pitch. All on. All I could tell myself. Everyone on their feet. They're playing the Irish jig music. It was electric, man. Next one, like, fastball away. I'm 2-0. Cookie right down the middle. Buggy whip it down the line, just foul. Next pitch, foul it straight back.
Oh shit!
Next pitch after that, curveball from the exterminator. Check swing, home plate umpire.
See ya.
Strike three. Look, man, you're not always. I'll never forget that at bat. I swear to you, it's like that bat I had against Mariano Rivera with 56,000 people standing on their feet right after 9/11. I'll never, and both of these bats, hey, didn't turn out in my favor. But sometimes the experience is bigger. And in that moment in Birmingham, Alabama, playing old Rickwood Field, oldest ballpark in America, that moment, that time to have the whole party animals, which were right behind me and shawing at me and this and that, right? And then this, to see all the boys, all the guys, like my dudes, up on their feet, like genuinely, like wanting it, rooting it, and like that matters, and that for me was the reward there. Like, we think about, we all get rewarded at different times in our lives, and No, the base hit didn't happen. And, you know, I mean, literally when you run on third base, but the reward is so often, not so often, it always is, in my opinion, it's the process. It's the ability to take that moment and have that experience. And then 2 weeks after that, I'm in Kansas City in a similar situation, hit a fucking bullet to left field.
I saw that, dude. I saw it. I was like, damn, Bursey still has it.
It's so cool, man. And you know what, Case? I think when we get away from it for so long and we don't really do it, and I see someone like you, like, you have to be away from it long enough. I would not have been able to do this if it was 5 years after I got to play. Like, I in my mindset would have been, nah, man, like, I'm good. Like, I'm not into it. And like right. I went on this journey, and the journey with endurance sports and everything else. And even when it comes to managing or coaching or any of that, like, you just kind of wanted to step back. And then I got into the analyst role, and you really, I learned as much about the game at MLB Network as I did playing 11 years in the big leagues. I'm not kidding. Like, what we did there and what you guys do there,
yeah,
it's special, man, because we're diving in not only to the mechanics of everything, but we're diving into the numbers, and we're really taking it all in, and we're learning now through the bananas experience.
Bernsie, tell us about the bananas for our listeners. Don't know what you're talking about. And what is the bananas? I look at it as like the Harlem Globetrotters of baseball, dude. You guys sell out everywhere you go. You can't get a ticket to the bananas, right? It's like. And there's people are scalping them, making good money on the side.
So I like to say it's like Hamilton of Broadway. And it's a blend of baseball and Broadway. And just like you mentioned, literally during our 8-city quote unquote world tour, which most of it was through the South, they sell tickets. The bananas sell tickets for $20. They sell out in minutes. And then the scalpers or the secondary ticket market gets a hold of these tickets and they resell them. The only thing I could think of that had the markup on these tickets that of anything that was ever like consistently playing outside of like a Super Bowl or something is Hamilton. We had tickets selling for as high as $500.
Oh my God.
Off of a $20, off of a $20 ticket.
Yeah. It's true.
So I managed the Savannah Bananas World Tour team. They're a professional team. We played one other team, which is the Party Animals. And we played, I think it was a total of 14 games in 7 or 8 different cities. And then they went back to being a college team. That's what they're doing right now. So when you see banana stuff going on right now, through the 8 weeks, there was cameras that followed us around the entire time. ESPN is doing a documentary, a docu-series, I should say, called Banana Land. And it's the release of this is August 21st, I believe. And
who did it? You said HBO did it?
ESPN.
ESPN, okay.
So ESPN did it. It's going to be on ESPN Plus. I don't know how much promotion of it they'll do on ESPN. I imagine a lot because they put a lot into this. I talk about living your life with a microphone on. And I forgot it was there on like several different times. And it's, I also think that's the best content. Because there was some moments where I'd say it probably, I got a little excited or got heated or whatever it was. It was very emotional, man. And there's this blend, and it goes back to talking about having a feel. Like, we're in the last inning, 2 outs, game on the line. You know, our shortstop goes between the legs and boots it. So, that's it. Ryan Cox is our shortstop. And it didn't happen in the very last inning, but it was like a tight game. And but he's also done this. He's done this 1,000 times before.
Right.
And Case, he's actually from up in your area. Fucking
oh, is he?
Behind the back shit. Like he's going to be a core banana going forward, at least so long as I'm involved.
Right. Right.
Love the kids as smooth as could be. So you have a feel for the situation of when to do these certain things. But that's, We play match play. So you don't, every inning is its own entity. If a fan catches a foul ball, you're out. You can't step out of the batter's box. You can't get off the mound. It's fast. It's furious. It's awesome. You could steal first base. I never thought I would love the actual game as much as I do. I knew it was going to be a shit show. I knew I was going to be able to fit in well. I just being able to communicate with the boys and everything and whatever. But I never thought that, number one, the baseball would be that good. Number two, it'd be that competitive. And I actually would care that much about winning. And right. The party animals, they'll make you do that because they're the other team we're playing, and they come storming over the fence, and they're all tatted up, and they're shooting off firework guns, you know, and they got the pirate music playing. It's a show, right. But it's a show that's not scripted.
Right. But you said one other thing, too, that I got to say for people who haven't seen this yet. I don't think it would be as successful if the baseball players weren't as good as they are of baseball players. This isn't like actor. I mean, maybe some of these guys have actor experience because they're all hysterical and they do a great job. But the baseball is still being played. You might do a backflip before you throw a ball, but the dude seems to be throwing 92 anyway, right after the backflip, right?
Yeah, no chance. That's right, man. You drove it. And that's what the message to the boy, like, none of this works. None of this works if we're not throwing strikes, if we're not catching the baseball, if we're not putting the ball in play. All of the semantics, all the antics, all the bullshit, all the TikTok, none of this fucking works, dudes, if we're not playing the game. Like, the mistakes on the base pass that are made or whatever, like, I can't tell you how many hidden ball tricks were done. There's no box, right? So the pitcher could be on the thing, as you know. Like, you have to keep your eye on the ball. You have to keep your eye on the ball. The kids love it, obviously. The hidden ball trick's like the greatest thing ever. I never thought it would work so many times, but it worked. It just kept consistently working and working and working. But these guys, they're all professional players. 90% of them are professional players. Probably maybe three that I could think of, three or four of what I would consider like core bananas aren't. And that's because they're either working for the team or have something else going on. Like, but these guys are, their entertainment skills are next level. Right. Right. So that's basically what will secure their job. At the same time, we had what felt like everybody, like, all go play pro ball. And we're talking about guys that would be in organizations too, because they dropped half the organizations in affiliated ball. So they're playing with independent league teams right now. I mean, it's fun following these guys and see them have success and everything else. None of it does work without it.
But there's also fan interaction, right? Isn't there if you've hit a foul ball and a fan catches it, aren't you out? Or yeah, explain that.
It's awesome. It's so cool. We were in like the biggest situation I could think of, and this is probably our second week playing because I hadn't seen it because our first weekend was in Savannah. Our second weekend was Daytona Beach at Jackie Robinson Stadium. And dude comes up, and it's like their best hitter too, or one of their best guys. The guy's been killing, Zach Whelan. He was killing us. It's the same dude that walked up with his bat on fire.
Yes, yes, yes.
Get the knock out the middle. Amazing. So Whalen's up there. Hits a foul ball. I'm not even paying attention to it. And then next thing you know, umpire turns around. I was like, it's out. Like, wait, what? Oh, shit. That won us the game. We brought the fan down on the field. We lifted his hand up. It was the greatest
thing. Did he catch it with a glove or his bare hand?
I think this guy had a bare hand. I was bare-handed.
So if the ball goes into the stands and the fans catch it, it obviously counts for your team. That's crazy. Yeah. I love it though. But yeah, that would get me to the game. Hey man, bring your glove tonight, Shawnee, because you know, if you're 12 years old and you can't make a catch, you can affect the game tonight for the bananas, you know?
So you know what, Casey, you actually you would like Jesse Cole, their owner, a lot. He's very innovative. Every single game they tried five new things. So five new things they've never tried before. And this is where I think in TV, Chinch, this is why you were the best, bro, because you were willing to try new things. And this is where I also think that if you're a TV executive or you're working in the industry, if they don't work, if you're not trying new things, you're failing. You're failing. When you become comfortable with the status quo and you think, okay, this is cool. So amongst the shit show that's already a shit show, then we have five new things coming on top of that. And so but within all of it, within all these new things that we're trying, we also have the core stabilizing things that we know work. Right. The parade to start off. Line up the fans outside. It's all every stadium's general admission seating. Line up the fans outside. So there's basically 5,000 fans in line to rush to go get their seat. We come around and we start at the back of the line with a full pep band, like, dude, what are you playing? Whatever music. And here we come dancing. Right? Boys are all union up. I got my fur coat on, cut off sleeve fur coat, the kilt. We're like, bananas. And then they do this song. Like, we all do it together with the fans. It's outside after the parade. It's, hey, baby, baby, who? Ha! I want to know if you'll be my girl. It's to see that many people come together. And we're talking, like, if I could take a picture of these faces before we come out and after we come out and by the time they leave the game, that's why I'm involved with this. The positive impact that we're making in people's lives, and even if it's just for 2 hours, and that's all the game is, 2 hours, time clock on it.
Oh, that's it, only even 2 hours? Wow, that's great. Hours. That's cool.
Even if it's just for 2 hours.
That's great.
That you change somebody's life in those 2 hours. And it was special. So I'm going back.
So how many innings? How many innings is it?
You could get nine. I very rarely get nine. Usually,
what's the least amount you've gotten?
I think probably 4-1, so five. Wow. Where we won. No, you had to win five, so 5-1, so probably six.
Okay,
six would have been the least. I think we won 5-1.
Wow.
Because it's all match play.
Yeah.
So you win the inning. Like, we went out there, we played the Kansas City Monarchs, who had Matt Adams and Pete Cosma. These guys were in the big leagues last year. Vladimir Guerrero.
Junior's cousin.
That kid Sweeney from with the Royals. Right. Anyway, so their first four hitters all played in the big leagues last year. They came out, and Kyle Luigs, dude, he's our dude, right? Him and Christian Dierman, two ace pitchers. Kyle throws 92. And, you know, does dance and everything else. Bro, they lit him up. Oh, my God. Whack, nice. Whack, whack. They probably scored. I think they scored six runs in that first inning. And we're down 1-0. Hmm. We come back. We win the second. New ball game. So the thought and idea, it keeps you competitive. It's great. And we ended up, what's cool is that, we ended up splitting with the Monarchs. They got us the first night, and the second night, that was the night where I pinched it myself. We were able to get them. And I think that was important because we had to prove we could do this against real players. It's not just the party animals. This is a real professional baseball team, an independent league team that's playing in the best independent league where guys go to get back to the big leagues. Right. And so obviously, I'm going to get, like, they're more talented than we are, but we play banana ball better.
Mm-hmm. And right.
See Matt Adams, though, and Pete Cosma.
This guy's legit.
Bro, to see them embrace it and love it.
Right.
And
because the game needs that. We need that. Like, there's little kids that will go to a Savannah Bananas game that you can't sit still at a baseball game at that age. Now, maybe they learn it and get better at it, but that interactive experience is number one of the greatest things you guys are doing. And I'll just go back to what you said quickly. I appreciate what you said, but I actually told, we just got an intern yesterday, and I said, here's what I want. Try something new. If you try something new, there's nothing anybody can compare it to. That's how I always tried to produce when I was at places. If you try something new, you might fail at it, but nobody can compare it to anything, and you get the A for effort. You tried something that nobody's ever done before, A for effort. Maybe we tweak it. And you guys, you can see the progress of what you guys have become. But for the kids, I think it's so great for children to be able to see the Savannah Bananas play baseball, because it gives that energy that you might not have with a six-year-old when you take him to a nine-inning Major League Baseball game yet. You know?
Dude, speaking of trying something new, I love that, Chinch, you said that, because for both you guys, I have a question for both you guys. Like, you watched the All-Star game the other day. You got Alek Manoah on the mound. He's like, you know, okay, slider right here. Let's go fastball away. Let's see if we can get him to chase. He's like, yeah, chase, boom. And he's like, oh, boom, there's three strikeouts. I'm out of here. Like, as a viewer, I'm like, this is like Savannah Banana ball right here. This is unbelievable. This is bringing me into the game. Do you think Major League Baseball and the union and the players will allow mics on guys? Because if they did, I think baseball would go to another level to see the personalities of what these guys are thinking, you know, throughout the game. What do you guys think of that? What did you think of the All-Star game the other night?
Yeah, I just think that, first of all, I loved it, obviously. That's right up my alley. I think that it's going to come down to everything else with the Players Association, which is compensation. So if you're willing to pay these guys to wear the mics, and I think there's guys that would do it. I also think that there's other guys that still, no matter what, want nothing to do with it. Because if you think about it, I mean, each and every time you take an at-bat, Case, your career and your livelihood is on the line. I mean, thousands and thousands of dollars are resting on this at-bat. So. Right. Same sort of thing with the pitching, right? So how many guys are in the All-Star game? Hey, fine. If you happen to give it up, you have to give it up. But how many guys are going to be willing to do that and then also do it live with, I got to imagine, some kind of delay, but it's because you don't know what you might say in the heat of the moment.
Well, Nestor Cortez, you said that the other day. He goes, slider down, and he threw it. He got bad pitches. He goes, fuck. And then he goes, oh, sorry.
Yeah.
He said it on air. He's like, fuck. Oh, sorry about that.
Did he really say that? Was it captured?
He said it. Oh, yeah, they captured it. They captured it. And it was like, you know, you could tell he said it, but it was, he moved on. But it was pretty funny. Like, it was like, oh, hey, it's real. If you're going to mic guys up and you're keeping it in real time, then you're going to get real stuff.
Yeah. Also, cursing isn't what it used to be, especially on TV. I've watched things on NBC like 9:30 at night and hear a word and I'll be like, I remember when I was a kid, that word was not allowed on television. Right. But I would love to see it more. But what you guys just said is, I totally agree. Yeah. It's tough. It's tough because when you do get them, they get excited about it. But in the process of a game, all of a sudden you're in the seventh inning and a game really matters. You probably want to rip that thing off your neck, right? When you guys are competitive.
I remember one time I was mic'd up against the Cardinals, and like I was 0-for-4. I was pissed too, Chinch. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So we're facing Isringhausen, and I'm coming up and hitting second in the game. It was a total tool move, but I didn't understand back then with the mics. I ripped the mic off. I slam it down. I go up there. I'm like, I'm sucking because of the mic. I punch out on like 4 pitches. I'm like, well, it looks like it wasn't the mic.
Case, believe it or not, as most people would probably try to say, like, oh yeah, I would have taken the mic. Dude, I wouldn't do it.
Wow.
Would not do it.
Really?
If I was sitting on the bench, I would have done it. I would not do it on the field. And I never had any interest just because of what we talked about. And the last thing I wanted was walk up to the plate and punch out for the third time and be like, damn, it's my fault. And us baseball players, maybe would think that, right? Like, I think this generation's a little different though, dude. I saw a guy in like one of the Perfect Game things. I was watching Perfect Game TV the other day. Is what my life's turned into now. And this prospect kid hits this nuke. And then you go back and you watch him like on deck and he had the mic on. And like this and that, and he comes across home plate and he's like mic'd up bomb. And I think these kids now, they've lived their lives in front of a camera their entire lives. They're not scared of anything, dude. Like, I watch my own kid and it's, you could tell him like dude, you're going to play on national TV. He wouldn't do any, like, yeah, whatever. Like, he's not, he's not phased. He's totally not phased. And that comes with exposure, and that comes with experience. And a lot of these kids have had exposure and they've had experience. And I don't know if it's a bad thing. I actually don't think it is, so long as the kids are able to understand that this is what it takes to be great. This is the work and everything else. That is just, yeah, sure. I caught my kid the other day, like, ripping through my phone, and I'm like, what are you looking at? And he goes, my hits. And I'm like, okay, what are you paying attention to? He's like, well, daddy, like, I'm doing this, this, and this, and I see this, and I'm like, all right. And like, Tony Gwynn was obsessed with video.
Right, and he had the VHS tapes.
He had the VHS, and he was the first one to go back and watch over and over and over again, right? And a lot of it was watching your hits, watching when you took good at bats. Yeah. I don't give a shit about hits. Barrels are what I care about. And I tell the boys, we hand out actually Slim Jims for barrels. Like, right. You come in, you get a barrel, you get a Slim Jim. It's all about barrels. It's all about process. And it's, I think these kids, they love, you know, dude, we'll stream the games on No Filter, and these kids will go grab the camera in the dugout and be like, you know, doing whatever they're doing. But so long as they know and understand, this is a game we're playing. There's certain times and place to have fun.
Right. Have a feel. It's the truth, man. It's the truth. Bernsie, I want to go again. We're talking baseball. We're talking process, all these things. I want to go back to your career just, you know, for a little bit here too, because, man, you really had some really good years. I mean, great years with the A's. We know that in the 2000s. Obviously, you were with Giambi a little bit, right? Right before he went to the Yankees. You were with those first few years. You were with Giambi brothers. But I want to talk about one of the years in 2007. I also know, I believe it was in your book, or maybe we had a conversation, you were talking about Sean Green. I believe you were with him in Arizona when he really taught you how to, like, start getting into the ball and getting a good turn and finishing through. And also, so I want to talk about that. I also want to talk about, you had 50 stolen bases, dude. I don't know if people realize how hard it is to steal one base in the big leagues. At least for me, it was. It was like, holy shit, is this hard to steal one base? To steal 50 bases, I don't know if we're seeing that, you know, nowadays anymore. Like, so you had 50 stolen bases, Burns. You almost, you know, you had about 60 plus extra base hits, and you played in 160 games with the way you played the game. I want to go back and take me through what it was like to play 160 games, first of all, and also just to put up those kind of numbers and the conversations you had with Sean Green. What was it? When did it all start to come together with you for you?
Okay, understand this. When I came to the big leagues,
I was
a bench guy, and
right.
Don't get me wrong, dude. I banged my way there.
Well, dude, your minor league numbers are legit. You dominated. It wasn't like dominated. Yeah.
So I had to bang my way to the big league, and I knew that too. I was a senior sign. I had gotten drafted out of high school. I got drafted my junior year. I waited.
Why didn't you sign with the Astros after your junior year? Why?
Confidence in myself that I was going to get to the big leagues no matter what. And
if
I wanted to go back to UCLA for another year and try to make a run at Omaha again, why not? And there's another side story with meeting with the scouting director and him basically saying, look, man, like, you know, we don't think you can hit the ball the other way. And this is almost going to tie back into the Sean Green story, but we don't think you can hit the ball the other way. You're a circus act in the outfield. You run well, but man, like your form's like all over the place. Here's $90,000. It's like half of what everyone else was getting in the round. It was a fourth round draft pick. And they're like, take it or leave it. And I said, with all due respect, Mr. Lakey, thank you for the offer and the opportunity to play professional baseball. But like 90 grand and, you know, I'm going to go buy a brand new truck. And, you know, I'm sure that's 45 grand, but then that's 45 grand that like you guys, Uncle Sam already took out. And now I'm dead broke again, right back to the same college kid I am now. So that said, you know, on top of that, like now you're telling me like all the things you don't love about me. So now I'm then be starting within an organization. I'm talking this out at breakfast with them. I'm starting with an organization that obviously doesn't believe in me.
Right.
I think I'll go back to UCLA, chase my Omaha dreams and go hang out with my cheerleader girlfriend, man. Like I'm good. Yeah. Now. Like,
good for you, bro. Good for you, like, man. Good for you, Bergie. Yeah.
So that was that. when I got to the big leagues, even, you know, first game, Chuck Finley, another fun story within the stories. But in college at UCLA, I used to take dry at bats where you would have like the Angels game on TV and say Chuck Finley was on the mound. Specifically, Chuck Finley was on the mound. And I'd be sitting here like this and watching like the sinker down and away. Boom, slider, like taking it. Boom, fastball up and up the plate, whack, right? Taking full hacks. And my roommates, the Valent brothers, Royce and Eric Valent.
Yeah, Eric Valent, he played in the big leagues, didn't he?
Hell yeah, he did. He hit for the cycle, played for the Mets, played for the Phillies.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Valent, he was in the draft room with the Marlins the other day as well. He's a real high up shot, and it was a cross checker, whatever it is. But doing a great job for the Marlins. So I would take these at bats. And sometimes, obviously, every now and again, case we like to get a laugh, I would take them naked. And so specifically, like I'd be taking these at bats and just like, you know, this whole pack is just
if your junk's hitting your legs, you're lunging.
Exactly. Exactly. So Valet's like, what the fuck are you doing? Whatever. So, sure shit, dude. Fast forward August 22nd, 2000. I show up my big league debut. Who's on the mound?
Chuck Finley.
Fucking Finley. I go like 1-2. I've already faced him before, naked in my living room in college. Sinker down and away. Whack. Pull it up the middle. Face it. I called Valent after the game. I go, listen here, motherfucker. All those naked at bats against Chuck Finley finally paid off. And the only reason why it was Chuck Finley is just this is like no one could watch baseball back then, right? Like you were watching, right. like we were either watching the Dodgers or the Angels, and that was it in our area. I'm sure the Dodgers probably had TV deal cut, you know, touch issue anyway. So I just remember being a lot of Angel stuff. And so Those are the type of things, and I know, you know, you get a laugh about the naked stuff, whatever, but like that's the obsessed gene. That's right. Like, you're always on. I like to say. So anyhow, dude, you know, get to the big leagues, and a couple days later I get sent down. And then I'm back up and down. I went up and down nine times until I got three starts in a row. Three starts in a row, and finally got that third start in a row. And Jermaine Dye actually hurt his knee, and Adam Pyatt was the dude that was I had to be on the depth chart that we all thought. And so Terry Francona was our bench coach, and Terry turns down. He's like, Pyatt, you ready? Pyatt's like, yeah, man, I'm ready. Get ready to go in. And all of a sudden, Pyatt's like running out there, and it was almost like Ken Mock pulled one of these, like, whack. It stops. And he turns down to the end of the bench. He goes, Burns! Get in the fucking game! And I'm like, huh? What? I was kind of disheveled. So now I'm grabbing my hat. I'm like, all right, cool. Run out of the dugout. Get a little cheer from the crowd. And the reason, only reason I went in that game was because of my hustle, because of the energy. Pyatt, make the argument, better player, higher on the depth chart, whatever else. Maka didn't care for me, never cared for me.
Well, Maka's like an old school, right? And you're like, who's this maniac Burns coming up?
It was like a day game after a night game. And it was fourth inning or whatever it was, just lackluster. The team was lackluster. And I went in there, boom, got a little spark. Like in my mind too, I had Kurt Gibson sign a bat for me, and he signed it I times V equals R. Had no idea what it was. Had to go back and ask Kurt Gibson. Image times vividness equals reality. Image times vividness equals reality. Image times vividness equals reality. The more vividly you can imagine something, the more likely it is to become your reality. And so now I'm in the outfield, just get thrown into this game. And I'm like envisioning myself, like making catches, making catches, making catches. Boom, ball hit the gap. Wah, 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 wah. Whew, got it. All right, good. Oh, boom, down. Got it. Okay, good. At the bat, slow it down, see it out of the hand. Slow it down, see out of the hand. Visualize. Here, two bullets up the middle. Get two knocks, we go on to win. Next game. I'm in the lineup. Start second time. Two more knocks. Next game. Two more knocks. Holy shit, now I'll get my fourth start in a row. Never had it.
Oh my God.
I hit in 22 consecutive games.
Wow, bro. Oh my consecutive God. Games. That's tough to do. Like, holy shit.
That was I had to hold him hostage. That was right. The only way I was gonna have the opportunity. And then after game 19 of the streak, game 19. We're facing McDougal from Kansas City throwing 100-mile-per-hour bowling balls.
Yeah, Mike
McDougal. You remember him, right?
Yeah,
Mike McDougal from Wake Forest. I'm 0-for-4 going into this last at-bat against, like, shitballers. You know, I'm like 86 cut and, like, nothing great. I come to my last at-bat. I don't feel good at all. Like, I have not felt comfortable all day. And here's McDougal. And all I could tell myself, two things. I times V equals R. Image times vividness equals reality. Image times vividness equals reality. Image times vividness. Okay, cool. Slow it down. Slow it down. Slow it down. And I'm in the box. In the first pitch that I see, and this is like for you, like literally, it almost looked like it was a slow motion. And I see the ball come out of his hand, and it started over the middle of the plate, and it broke in. And I could kind of see that, like how it's going to come in. It's like, and I took it like very comfortably. I'm like, man. That must have been a changeup. I looked up the board, 99 miles per hour.
Oh, shit.
I said, okay. I said, this is where I want to be. Same thing. Saw the ball come out of the hand. This one started like outer third, broke back towards middle. Tension-free barrel release, dropped the head. Ball skyrockets to left. Line drive. I'm running down the first baseline. Get up! Get up! Get the fuck up! The ball ricochets off the top of the chain link fence that's just above the wall at Kauffman Stadium and shoots like 3/4 of the way up the stands. 2-run ding dong Donkey Kong to win the game and 20 game hit streak on top of that. Then I went two more and then I ran into, I think it was Brad Penny down in South Florida. And I hit one ball. At his height. One ball. In my second at bat, hit a fucking bullet down the line. And I don't remember who was playing left field, but like standing right there. I kept
Cliff? Was it Cliff Floyd?
Yeah, damn, it could have been, man.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd, but they had like played this extreme shift the other, like, I don't know how or why. I still don't remember anyone really playing me like down the left field line. I wasn't like it's dead. I would pull a lot of balls.
Yeah.
There was more gaps. And he was playing right on the line, and it was a penny curveball. And he had like a freaking
great hook, nasty. Yeah.
So it was like stay on it, boom. And once that was it, and then it ended at 22. But it was a hell of a run. So then I get traded to Colorado, and they love me so much. 2 weeks later, I was gone. And then Baltimore, I show up. Lee Mazzilli, this guy's an all-timer.
Was Lee still crushing heaters back then?
100%. And I walked into his office at 8 a.m. after taking a red eye flight from Colorado.
Yo, Burnsy, I've been trying to get you over here for a long time, man. Welcome to Baltimore. Listen here, you're gonna be my starting left fielder. I got 3 rules. Show up on time.
Like blowing smoke in my face.
You play hard. And you steal every fucking time you get on base. Still get him, kid.
That's awesome.
Go out there. I mean, it was awesome, though, because I'm the starting left fielder. Like, no one's ever told me I'm a starter. Even when I was in Colorado, it was like, they had a bunch of young outfielders, and there wasn't a winning team. And it was like, you know,
right.
I played every game I was there, but I would never have that someone grab your back. And I went out there, dude, I hit my first 11 games. Although the first at bat, I think it was my second at bat. I hit a double down the line on second base. And all I could think about was Lee Mazzilli. Kill every fucking Long Beach. And then Jose Contreras, you remember him?
Oh, yeah, nasty.
He's like, what's this fucking maniac doing? He goes like this. He goes, see ya. Pick my ass off. So 11 games later, Mazzilli gets shit canned.
Right.
Sam Prelazzo takes over. We go to Oakland. I go 0 for Oakland. And it was all downhill after that. And then
never
I
played again.
Yeah, it was just against lefties. And
yeah.
The lefty-righty split thing, dude.
I'm so tired.
If you're right-handed, it's gonna, and you're a platoon player, it's gonna get you, man. And it's only 30% of the pitchers in Major League Baseball are left-handed. So
yeah, the whole platoon thing is so tired. Anyhow, I can't stand it.
I'm with you. How's a lefty ever gonna get better against Jock Peterson?
Yeah,
don't ever fucking tell me Jock Peterson can't hit lefties. You've never given him the rightful opportunity to hit him.
Dude, the guy that's in the league with you, Matt Adams, I used to say, this guy hit 310 off lefties in the minors, gets to St. Louis, all of a sudden he can't hit lefties. That's his stuff. So they make him a platoon, not a platoon guy, but he hits against righties. Dude, Matt Adams should have had a way better career than he did. He was a great hitter. You take a great guy. I always say, when I hit against lefties, it made me better against the righties because it forced me to keep my front shoulder in, stay in on that pitch, right? So, like, I can't stand it. I said, well, this guy doesn't hit lefties well. How do you hit lefties well? I go, how do you hit them? You got to play against them every time out. That's how you hit lefties.
No, dude, you're so right. Brandon Belt got pinch hit for the other night. He was 3 for 3.
Yeah, it's a joke.
Brandon, like,
come on, Cap. Tell Capo to clean that up. Timeout. You know? Have a feel.
And that's it. And I go back to that. And I actually said that on KMBR the other day. Have a feel.
Yeah.
You have to have a feel for the situation. And if you're going to tell me the numbers, go ahead, give me the support that a right-hander coming off the bench cold that was eating a cheeseburger an inning and a half ago
exactly.
is going to come in ready to bang compared to a dude that's 3 for 3 and seeing the ball like I saw it against Mike McDougal in Kansas City. There's no chance. Compare those numbers. What is that guy in his fourth at bat after being 3 for 3? I want to know that because I know, Case, whether I was getting a hit or not, dude. I was barreling balls.
Everything. Me too. Exactly. And your confidence. You come up 3 for 3. I'm like, you could take a bazooka with a BB in there and launch it at 200 miles an hour. I'm going to square it up. I'm going to hit something hard somewhere. You know what I mean?
We do the same thing with pitching now too, though, because you could be 0 for 2 and not even know what the guy even looks like. And then you go out for your third at bat and you're like, thanks. Who's this guy? Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, nowadays.
But they're like third time through the lineup. I got to get our guy out of there, and you're not giving him a chance. I get it. There are diminishing returns for most pitchers in Major League Baseball, but have a feel of, like, what does he look like? Like, what's his stuff telling you that day? What's his body language telling you that day? There's a blend. There's a balance between the two. And I got to imagine you guys would agree with me here, but if you watch all of the teams that have won World Series over the past decade, at least, I could go back during their playoff run or during their World Series run, and I could question multiple of the manager moves. The one I always talk about was John Farrell starting Johnny Gomes over Daniel Nava. Daniel Nava hit 300 for him all year. He was their guy. He was their dude. Yet John Farrell's like, Johnny Gomes is my guy. And I remember being on MLB Network, like, where's Daniel Nava? Like, I love Johnny Gomes. Johnny Gomes, No Filter Network ambassador. Kicks ass for us. I'm all about Johnny Gomes. Johnny and I talk about this all the time. I was on there going, where's Nava? Where is Daniel Nava right now? Johnny Gomes, boom, 3-run homer in St. Louis, wins the World Series.
Right.
Crazy. Like that's an unconventional move. I would not have done it. All the numbers say the opposite. You know, those managers that really get the feel. Bruce Bochy was the best at it. The absolute best. Taking the numbers, but you have the feel. And you got to have the balls. Got to have the balls to not worry about the backlash.
Right.
You have to. You know, I always ask myself whether this is for our Let Them Play travel team or this is for the Savannah Bananas. What's best for the Bananas? do what's best for the Bananas. Not what's best for me as the manager. Right. Not what's best for the kid. Not what's best for the front office. Jesse or anyone else right there, the TikTok dancer. This, what's best for the Bananas in general? Like, what is best for the Bananas? That's the answer. Yeah. That's what we go with. That's the best situation right now for the Bananas. Right now for Let Them Play. This is the best thing for Let Them Play. And we always have something when you're making decisions, not selfishly. Those decisions come a lot easier. So, for example, like John Farrell, like in his mind, what's best for the Boston Red Sox? He felt like it was Johnny Gomes, and he went right. with it, and he got rewarded because of it. Bruce Bochy, there's a thousand of those moves that he made through the Giants championship run. So, yeah, it's fascinating to say the least. I will tell you the Sean Green story just for fresh in my head, real quick.
Yeah, because I want to hear that. It's so good.
Yeah, we can't leave this one out. I show up in Arizona. Carl Keel, I met with him, wrote
the book. Yeah, Men's Club of Baseball, yes.
So Carl Keel and I developed a real good friendship, and Carl is like, yo, meet me at Mimi's on Scottsdale Road. And I'm like, yeah, sure. Like, you know, and I show up. And he goes, sit down. He goes, what the fuck happened last year? I'm like, I don't know, Carl. I said, it's bad second half of the season. I got traded twice. You know, then I got not tendered. And I said, Lee Bazzilli was there and he was my supporter. And then he got fired. And Dan O'Dowd said I was going to be at the Rockies for a long time. And next thing you know, I'm on a plane to Baltimore. And I like, you know, my heart was broken in Oakland. And I that first time being traded. And he goes, here's a napkin. On this side of the napkin, write down everything you can't control. And dude, there wasn't enough napkin space from
right.
the weather to the umpires to getting traded to so many different things, scheduling, like all this stuff. And he's like, flip it over. He's like, on this side, you know, hitting ball hard and not, you know, like now it's another uncontrollable element, fielders, all this. What pitcher you're facing? They turn over on this side, like, write down everything you can control. Attitude, effort, preparation, process. Not a whole lot more. Might have had one or two other things there. And he goes, this is what we're going to focus on. And Carl Keel and I had a talk every week. He's like, I just want to talk. Didn't charge me money, nothing other than the fact that we developed a friendship in Oakland. He was a mental skills guy there. He was in Cleveland at the time, ironically. And he just, for whatever reason, wanted to see me have success. He said, he used to always tell me, he's like, I think you're good for the game. The way you play is good for the game. He says, so I want to keep you playing this fucking game. He said, you're going to be out of the game if you fucking keep doing that shit you did last year. Like, I had to see. Some tough love too. So I get to Arizona. I signed 1 year stopgap center fielder for Chris Young coming up, and Jeff DeVanna was there in spring training. Jeff DeVanna hits 500 in spring training. I do okay. Like I hit 300. Like I felt pretty good. Everything. So I get the first month of the season. DeVanna's the guy. Bob Melvin comes up to me and is like, Burnsy, you know you're my guy. He goes, how do I not start DeVanna right now? And then we had Luis Gonzalez and Sean Green as your left fielder and right fielder. And those guys were going to play every day, no matter what. So he goes, I'm going to get you in there. He goes, stay ready. He goes, I will get you in there at least one game, every series. So sure enough, one game, every series, got my start, you know, wherever it was, gives you center field and then DeVanna would move over. But I'd get one game a series and then one game a series and one game a series. So I get the end of April, dude, I'm hitting 200. I got like one homer the whole time through that process. Though. I hit batting practice with Tony Clark, Luis Gonzalez, and Sean Green.
Oh.
And every single day, we would play an oppo home run game where if you pulled the ball down the line to left field, like say 375 and over at Bank One Ballpark, Bob or Chase Field, whatever they call it, no points. 375 to the big green monster would get you 1 point. Over the big green monster in center above the yellow line was going to get you 2 points. And then anything to the right of that would get you three for me, for right going oppo, right? So for Sean Green, it was all the opposite going back the other way. Tony Clark, Luis Gonzalez would play two. And so what I learned how to do, and with the tutelage of Sean Green, was stay short to it and then long through it. And the way Sean likes to call like a torque, like the way he would wind up where literally like this front half would close and he would start open, and think about it like a rubber band effect. And he created this whip like I've never seen, dude. He hit the furthest opposite field home runs of anybody I ever played with in batting practice, and it wasn't even close. Like, dude, this guy was getting your damn TGI Fridays. That's how far these balls were going.
Wow, really?
Oh, dude, it was insane. Oh, like he hit one off the facing of that upper deck the other way. I've never seen anyone do that. So I took and again, we all have to apply this within ourselves, and it's gonna feel uncomfortable. And so there was a month that I spent like getting uncomfortable, and basically it was weight transfer, making sure like the little leg kick, staying short to it, but then long through it, and letting the ball travel, having the confidence to let the ball get deep, and then firing. And it wasn't necessarily for me about hitting the opposite field home run. Obviously, it wasn't bad practice. But now what was happening is that all these balls that I was hitting down the left field line that I was pulling foul, or, you know, I wasn't quite staying through, whatever it was. Now these balls were leaving the ballpark. And when I finally got my chance to play, it was against, I think it was Omar Dahl, left-hand pitcher for the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
Boom, took him deep, and I never looked back. You know, 26 homers, 25 stolen bases. Next year, 20 homers, 50 stolen bases, and we end up going to the playoffs. And part of that 2017 that nobody expected us to do shit. We had a negative run differential too, which is amazing. But the teams that have negative running differentials and winning records, know what those are? They're fucking ballers.
Because they're getting the big hits when they need it, right? They're getting the big hits. Yeah.
When they're like, everyone will look at that and be like, oh, well, this is unsustainable, this and that. Bullshit, man. Those are the guys that know how to win baseball games, and you better look out.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it, dude. I love it, dude. That's so true. So true. A lot of good. We had Luis Gonzalez on here the other day, bro. And go look at his numbers, man. Almost 600 doubles, 350 homers. I mean, I don't know. It makes me think of Will Clark. Like, for me, Will Clark's a Hall of Famer. Like, I hope one day we go back and especially nowadays with how they're critiquing Hall of Famers, and we go back and look at some of these guys like Lance Berkman, Luis Gonzalez, Will Clark, and Don Mattingly, and we say, hey, maybe these guys were Hall of Famers. You know what I mean? Like, with the criteria now, you know?
They were. Don Mattingly was. There's no doubt. There's no doubt in my mind. You know, Gonzo, you look at those numbers and everything that he did.
Yeah.
Mattingly and Will Clark, like, you know, Will has his retirement ceremony coming up on July 30th. I'm actually going to be there for
all the
festivities and be down on the field with them.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. And that's a well-deserved honor. He says, he's like, this is my Hall of Fame. And it's not, you know, less about having to feed these guys ego later in their life. I think it's just more recognition and celebration of the impact that they had on the game of baseball and on the fan base and the people that supported them and loved them and followed them. You know, like I know you and I, Case, were with Will. So, yeah, that whole era, you know, but obviously, you know, a lot of this is tainted by the whole steroid thing. But, you know, my take on it now is there's dudes that are already in the Hall of Fame who have taken steroids. So, like, if there's guys there now, you got to go on what the back of the baseball card says, man.
Yeah.
Not, you know, get your subjective holier than thou opinion out of it. And I, you know, I just seriously, like, and it's not, if anything, as somebody who never took steroids, like I should be on the other camp. Like, oh, I got screwed. I get this. Nah, fuck, man.
Right.
One of the main reasons why I never took steroids or got into them or anything else, like I wouldn't have felt like I was cheating, because you're looking around, you're like, dude, everyone else is doing it.
Right.
I was scared of all the side effects, the premature balding, the testicle shriveling,
right,
the back knee. And on top of the fact that, like, I'm like, I don't really feel like I need to get faster or hit a ball further. I need to lay off the 2-2 curveball in the dirt.
No, it's true, man. And that was our generation. I mean, I feel the same way. Like, I didn't feel any need to use steroids back in the day or whatever. Like, you know, would it have been nice to turn 46 doubles into 40 homers and 20 doubles? Maybe, whatever, at the end of the day. But like, I think when you look back, you go, hey, there was no testing during our time. You know what I mean? It was a different era, right? And you and I know, Bernsie, they're letting guys in that no doubt are using performance enhancing drugs. So you really got to start evaluating, you know, guys a little differently and you know, not being holier than thou, I guess. Bernsie, we finished this thing up with two things. We like to know who owned you and who did you own?
Wow. Okay. I would say actual guys that I faced that owned me, the one pitcher that owned me more than anybody. And it's not this gigantic sample size because I'm sure, you know, every chance that Mock or Arhau got, they were pulling me when I had to go face them was K-Rod.
K-Rod. So, yeah. Yes. With the Angels.
Look at the numbers against K-Rod
with 6 Ks.
And I didn't punch out a lot. Like that wasn't, my thing. I typically put the ball in play. So 0-for-7 with 6 Ks. The other guy that owned me was Chris Young. Tall Princeton.
6'10", throwing 90-mile-an-hour fastball straight as a string right there.
Right down the middle. Right down the middle.
You know who's my claim to fame, right? I hit him in college because I was at Columbia when he was at Princeton. It's the only good thing. That's my moment that I have. You guys had 15 years in the big leagues. I hit Chris Young when I was in college.
What'd you do, Jinch? Single, double?
I mean, dribblers up the middle and shit.
Hey, they're knocks.
I got hits off of them. But you were, 23 at-bats. You were 3-for-23 with 10 Ks off a
single. 10 Ks. I would swing right underneath it. And I had that steep swing, so I pounded sinker ballers. Whereas if you had that good four-seam ride up to the zone, you know, we were taught hitting the wrong way. Chop, chop, chop.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, I need to get on top. I need to chop down. And it just it wasn't good. I will say that I think it was in 07 down the stretch that I was facing Chris Young and I had this epic long at bat against him. He had absolutely owned me. And I two runners on base. And let's just call it like the 10th, 11th pitch at the at bat after fouling off one fastball after another. He threw me a slider and I hit a 3-run Johnson. It was like, oh dude, I wanted to celebrate. Like I've never celebrated in my life. But he still overall absolutely owned me. So
who did you own? Like, who were you like, oh man, they're so glad they're pitching today.
So one guy, you guys are never going to fucking believe this. Uh-huh. Greg Maddux.
It's so good.
No way, dude.
9-for-26, 3 doubles, a dinger. And you only struck out three. No, wait, hold on. Even more. I'm sorry. Yeah, 9-for-22.
Nine for 22.
A triple, a dinger. And you stole a base off him. 409 against
Maddux.
Okay. But that, as Casey knows, that doesn't tell the whole story because I also faced him in spring training. And was 3-for-3 off him with three absolute fucking bullets.
That's probably so harder. That's harder.
All hits are not created equal. And so like the 9 hits that I had against 9-for-22, the 9 hits I had against Greg Maddux, like, and the outs were loud. Like it was, he had that ball that would run into me. So it's the same concept of a lefty, like a curveball coming in. So everything was coming in. And the one thing that I did really well as a hitter is these motherfuckers were quick right here. So it's like, wah, right? So that was one guy. Other than that, I mean, maybe Derek Lowe, the numbers against him were probably pretty good.
Yep. 406, 13-for-32. Mark Burley, 13-for-30. David Wells, 12-for-29. And Jamie Moyer, you had the most home runs off of anybody. You had 3 homers off Jamie Moyer.
But he owned me until I got him twice in Philadelphia one day. What?
Bartolo Colon, too. You got pretty good.
Yeah, Bartolo Colon for a while, it was really good. And then, dude, that was when Claude was throwing 98.
100,
shit
yeah.
Shit was moving. No one remembers that part.
He was nasty, dude. He was nasty.
We didn't even call him Bartolo. His name was Bart.
Bart.
That was a whole different fucking guy, man.
Oh, my God, dude. All right, Bergson, last thing, 9 and 90. Chinch, going to say something. He's going to give it to me. Then you go. Go ahead, Chinch.
I love you, Bernsie. Here we go. First one. Would you rather never cut your toenails again or never cut your hair again, Sean?
I'd rather probably never cut my toenails again. But although my girlfriend Sarah is like, don't touch me in the bed with your toenails are so nasty. So
what do you got, Bernsie?
Hair, dude. Hair. It's not even toenails. That shit's growing like that. You can't run. Hair.
All right. This is a good one. What's the hardest workout of these? Weight training, running, swimming, or biking?
Well, you got the Ironman. I would say swimming is probably the hardest.
It's running. It's not even close.
Really? Running?
So long. The most bang for your buck, if you were to tell me you're 400 pounds and you want to lose 200 pounds and what's my fastest and easiest way to do it, it's running. It's the biggest bang for your buck, period. Wow. I've done them all, obviously. That is
why is it the biggest bang for buck? Why?
Just be efficiency with time, effort, energy, exertion, all of it. It obviously depends on the pace too. Fat burning metabolism, like getting into that zone too, where it's comfortable and you go forever. But the swimming thing, don't get me wrong. Like swimming if once you know how to swim, it's a cakewalk.
Oh, well, I don't know how to swim. That's why it's so hard.
Yeah.
All right, here's a good one. Other than people calling you guys Case and Burns, what was the best nickname you had when you played ball? And who gave you?
Best nickname I had.
I've heard a bunch of guys call you Pig on here, but
No, you know what? When I was in college, oh, well, I'd say the mayor. I mean, the mayor is probably the best nickname I've ever had. So, right?
I don't even think we have an entire show developed.
It helps, Chance. It's called the mayor's office. Jag off.
All right, Burns, you take
it. So when I was in the Dominican Republic, I mentioned this earlier, I believe. Like, Greeny assisted, but I was won the first MVP award 20 years of American player. And so my nickname there was El Capitan America. But the truth of the matter is that my teammates just called me fucking Loco. And that was Loco.
I can see that. I can see that version. That's great.
That's a good one. All right, this is good. When they're casting a movie about your life, who plays you?
What's the guy's name? Jerry O'Connell? Wait, who's married to...
Long Island guy, yeah.
Yeah, that's a really great call, dude.
Yeah, I have a lot of people say, hey, you look like Jerry O'Connell.
What about the Friday Night Lights guy? Would be good for you too. The guy that played the coach.
Yeah, I can't remember his name. I like that guy.
What do you got, Burns?
Stifler.
That's
what?
That's right on the money.
Sean William Scott.
Yeah. All
right. I got his phone number too.
Nice. It's more annoying. Somebody looking down at their phone when you're talking to them. Or somebody talking to somebody else while you're on the phone with them. You get it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. They're both so annoying. I hate both that stuff. you know what? I can't stand when I'm talking to somebody on the phone and they're talking to someone else or doing, it literally freaking makes my blood boil.
I could not disagree more.
Ooh.
If you're on the phone with somebody, right. It's rare to get somebody on the phone these days.
Right.
If you get somebody on the phone, that's a big deal.
That's
so
true.
If there's outside conversation or something that happened, they're still, thought so much of you to let you get on the phone with them. That,
right.
If they want to have a side convo, I'm okay with that.
I think it was fun.
If I'm having a conversation with you and I see this, every person I see, I want to take that phone, snatch it out of their hand, throw out the fucking window.
I'm with you. Harold Reynolds once called me once. I swear, I love him. Everybody knows I'm good friends with him. So I know him. I make fun of him sometimes. He called me once, walking into a deli, then said, hold on, and then gave his entire order for his kids, his wife, and him. And I was like, what's up? Hey, hold on, Chinch. yeah, let me get that number five handshake, classic, whatever. I'll never be. That's what made me think.
Dude,
of
hey, yeah. if Harold watches this, which I doubt he does, dude, call me, bro. I miss you. You can order all you want. He used to call me, and I felt like half my conversations were exactly like what you're talking about, Chinch. I miss those, man.
Yeah, great. All right. Worst type of roommate: a messy person who is hygienically clean, or a neat person who smells like shit.
You know, I need the hygiene. So if you're a little messy and you smell good, I'll take it. I don't know what this bad smell in my room.
Oh wow. I was a bit of a neat freak. So like cleanliness matters. Show me how you do anything, I'll show you how you do everything. Like that was always it's important to me how you keep your ship. Like how tidy is it? Mm. That said, I think Case is right though, man. Like someone that doesn't shower, doesn't brush their
teeth. Yeah, you don't want that, bro. You don't want that.
I agree. All right. Couple more. Summer blockbuster in the theater, a concert, or a Broadway show?
Well, I just saw Michael Jackson on Broadway, which was phenomenal, so I would recommend that. But I'm definitely a concert guy.
All right.
I'm going to go with Broadway. As someone who saw Hamilton seven times.
Whoa.
Wow.
What made me love Broadway so much is no phones.
Yeah, right.
Moment. And every time I watched it, I saw other plays obviously as well, but like I would go to these Broadway shows by myself and just immerse myself in the moment. And the last time, never cried at Hamilton. The seventh time I saw it, cried.
Wow. Bersey, do you miss New York? Cause I know you had a nice place there right in the meatpacking district. Do you miss going there?
Case, we actually just closed on it. By the way, we just
sold
it.
Did you really?
Yeah, we had it. It was good. We had it rented out for the
it's great
past couple of years, but just closed on it. I 100% miss New York.
Yeah,
part of the motivation to get No Filter up and cranking is to get ourselves an East Coast office and get set up out there. Yeah. I think it's the greatest city in the world.
And you gotta say that. I grew up on the
West Coast. Hell yeah, baby.
I'll never forget Burns and I went out one night and we were going to this other bar and he was like, hey Case, we're going to this other place. When we walk outside, it's like freaking monsoon rains in Thailand in July. I'm like, holy shit, this is unbelievable. I'm like, Burns, let's get an Uber. He's like, no Case, we're gonna sprint. I'm like, what the hell? So next thing you know, I'm sprinting through New York with Burns. He is flying, and I'm like, oh my god, I'm so slow, I'm dying. I'm hitting every puddle you can hit. Hot foot. We get to this next bar, Chinch. I am freaking soaked. I look like I'm in The Notebook in the final scene. I'm like, holy shit, I'm soaked.
So we were running from Tao, I believe, to Bathtub Gin, and then to Avenue. It just kind of brings this whole thing back around, because I feel like early on in the show, I was talking about the bottles and funnels.
Burns has, they have plaques in those three places on the wall with Eric Burns' name on them. By the way, speaking of that concept, you said something once in a meeting where you were like, I would be doing the same thing if I were that kid in college. Stay in college. And somebody goes, why? And Burns goes, because like me, you got to be hanging from the chandelier one more year at the house or something. And everybody was so much older. Everybody was like, holy shit, Burns is crazy.
Swinging from the chandelier at the Sigma Neu House. That's what it was.
There it is. All right, last question. Would you still go in the ocean if a shark was spotted earlier that day?
No.
Burns would just roll the dice.
You want to talk about like things that let you know you're alive. I had an 8-foot juvenile great white shark swim directly under me 4 years ago tomorrow. It was a fucking rush.
We caught
the drone footage, but it wasn't. Here's the funny thing: it wasn't a rush until I went back and watched it. And then it was like, wait, what the fuck?
Wait, what were you doing, Bernsey? What were you doing?
So it was the end of the triathlon Across America swim. So I'd swim 7 miles across the San Francisco Bay.
Oh my God.
And a buddy of mine, Phil Cuddy's with the Night Train Swimmers. They're like these gnarly bay swimmers. They go out and do the Farallon Island swim and everything else. And so he helped me with the tide charts and everything with, because the bays, it's not easy to swim, dude, because you have the flow tide and the ebb tide. And so you have to time this thing right. Otherwise, you're going to be swimming in place. And he called me up the night before. He goes, "Yo, dude." He goes, "Look out for Jaws." And I'm like, I get it. Like, you're fucking with me, right? And he goes, "Nah, man." He goes, "There's been this like crazy influx of great whites on the Oakland side of the bay." Mm-hmm. And I grew up in these waters. I don't think about sharks. I like, you do think about them every single time you get in. But then once you're in there, like you're surfing and you're on your board and stuff, your mind goes numb to it. So when I first hopped in the San Francisco Bay, obviously, sure, you think about them possibly being there, but as I'm swimming across the bay, like, I'm dealing with embargo ships and like all kinds of crazy things that the sharks are not, they're the least of my worries. And all I saw, like, the whole time I was swimming is like green, 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 like the water appeared green to me. And then I saw this huge black shadow go underneath, and I'm like, whoa. And I look up, and it was like, my boy's here with the kayaks. Because they were flanking both sides. And I'm just God. Like, oh, whatever. I said, I guess they didn't see it. I'm like, I guess everything's good. And there was a seal, too, earlier on that was kind of tracking us. So I thought maybe it was a seal that had gone underneath. But the lady who was shooting the drone footage for the documentary, which I highly recommend you guys see if you haven't seen it already, it's called Let Them Play Triathlon Across America. And you get on all the major platforms. But she had this drone footage. And here comes, you see it like this, and you know it's a shark because the way it moves, like with the tail.
Yeah.
It's
like,
oh my God.
And right here. So,
Holy shit. Oh my God. Well, Bonesy, that is a great way to end this, bro, because that's exactly how you do everything, bro. Right, just above the sharks, riding along with them, a little on the edge, everything you do, brother. But hey, man, thanks for letting us, you know, be back on No Filter here with you. Thanks for letting us go down memory lane, and thanks for letting us jump into Eric Burns' life, you know, for a couple hours here. It was a ton of fun, man. Love you, man, so much. Miss you.
Hey, bro.
Dude, I love miss you guys, too. We got to do this more. We got to get you guys, at the very least, recording this shit on No Filter Live, to then upload it everywhere else you do it. You guys are good for this platform. However I can help facilitate whatever extra you guys want to do here, you guys are part of the OGs, part of the family, and you know, honestly, grateful for our friendship over the years. Grateful for all those years, Chinch, you know, you putting up with me and going to bat for me at MLB Network, Case, you know, some of the best dinners I've ever had with anybody, you know, mandates one-on-one.
So great.
I'm just going to finish with this, because when we first started work at MLB Network, I knew Case from the field, but that was about it. Hey, what's up, man? Just nicest guy in the world. They call him the mayor. And we first start at MLB Network. We all kind of started at the same time. You, me, Millar. Yeah. It's kind of like one after another, right? As we came trickling in. And it's like, okay, hey, we're gonna go to dinner. And Chinch, I have a feeling like you were at this dinner. And we went to the steakhouse that they have, one in Vegas. It was in the meatpacking district. It is.
I know what you're talking about.
STK.
Yes.
STK, and I'm like, this is cool. It's like a chance to get to know these guys. You know, I think I just signed my contract with MLB Network, and you know, these are guys I'm gonna be working with. And I always thought to myself, I knew Millar a little bit more, and I knew he was a little twisted, and you know, whatever. So right, so the nice guy persona, everything else, but I knew Millar had this little edge to him. And Case, I just didn't know, and had no idea. And so we show up, we sit down, we're just getting comfortable. I didn't think our first drinks have arrived yet. And it's like, we're talking about this guy and this guy and this guy. And Case is like, oh man, like nicest guy in the world. Yeah, I love him. And then this next guy comes up and nicest guy in the world. Love him. I'm like, dude, he really is like the mayor. Like, and then all of a sudden there was a name that came up, and immediately I'm like, oh, Sean Casey. Hey, about I mean, it's the nicest guy. I love him. Because this guy, this other guy, would be considered a little bit more of a controversial character. It goes around to him, and all of a sudden, Case, oh, such and such? Fuck that guy! What a fucking douche, man! What a fucking piece of shit! Him and I are going to be best friends. Fuck yeah, that's my dude. He's my dude. I got it, man. You passed the test, and we've been boys ever since.
You're the best, Percy. You're the best, brother. Thank you, man. Thank you.
Love you guys.
Love you, buddy. See you soon, brother.
Oh, man. How great, dude.
Dude, that's great, man. He's the thought, dude. Love me some Eric Burns, dude. Just a great guy. And you know Chinch, that's him. Mm-hmm. That's him. Everyone always asks me, all the guys in the room, hey, what about Burns? I'm like, Burns is times 10, maybe off air. He's tame on there. Mm-hmm. You know, but he lives his life. He lives it well. He lives it the way he wants to live it. He's such a good dude, such a good father. He's everything you just saw in this interview, man. He's just
right.
I miss him. I miss, you know, he doesn't work at the network anymore. I miss seeing him too.
He's fearless, but he's not fear. He's fearless, but he thinks, you know, everybody says,
he has a feel.
Like you said, he's one of the smarter guys you'll ever meet. Everybody, oh, he must be crazy. He's not crazy. He's crazy like a fox.
Yeah.
He's, and by the way, one of the most loyal friends you'll ever have. Greatest.
Yes, guy. Dude. What a great guy. That story is true to do. When we went running through New York one night, it was pouring rain, dude. I was soaking wet. I'm like, Burns, why can't we just get an Uber? He's like, we got to run through the rain. I'm like, all right, that's how we do it, Burnsy. Oh, man. Great show, Chinch. Awesome, it was fun dude. Doing on No Filter, too. It's been a long time, man. That was a lot of fun. And just really cool. All the listeners out there, man, please continue to download us, subscribe to us. And, you know, keep liking us. Leave us a review if you can. And we really appreciate you guys listening. We know the viewership's going up. Chinch, I love you, brother. I will see you in a few days, man.
All right.
Travel out across the burning.